Good afternoon. Let's resume our meeting of the title board. The time is 3:02 p.m. And just for the record, the title board for the next agenda item, which is 126, is Dan Carton, Jason Dunn, and Bill Hobbs. The number 126 is before the board on a motion for rehearing submitted by Scott Gessler on behalf of Steve Durham. Mr. Gessler, if you could come forward and tell us about your motion for rehearing, please.
Thank you, Mr. Hobbs. For the record, my name is Scott Gessler. I represent Mr. Steve Durham in this motion for rehearing. I'll just walk through the motion for rehearing in a summary fashion to set the framework and maybe address just a few specific points. First of all, is the jurisdictional issue that, as we said in the motion, what this initiative actually does, sort of hidden within the folds of this initiative, I guess to use language from the single subject case law, it creates a new right. It creates a new right to landowners. To give them a property interest in land use regulations that affect their neighboring property. And what I've done is I provided, prior to the break, a copy of the Colorado Supreme Court case, Hillside Community Church versus Olson. And that came up in obviously not the exact same context, but what that was a due process claim against a church as well as against the city of Golden, and what it said was that the Marion Olson and Ida Ruth Adler, what they did is they argued that they had a property interest in the manner in which land use regulations were enacted, and it wasn't land use regulations that affected their property, but it was land use regulations that affected a neighboring property, an adjoining property. That reached the Colorado Supreme Court, which ultimately rejected that. You said there was not a property interest, and therefore they did not have a due process right in the manner in which the land use regulations were applied. I didn't provide the full site. There was a petition for cert before the United States Supreme Court, which was ultimately declined. But ironically, if you look at the case law, there is quite a bit of a split as to whether or not certain laws create property interests or not with respect to land use regulations affecting neighboring properties and with respect to those land use regulation procedures. My point is this is a well-trod area. It's one that's received a lot of analysis. It's one in which the Colorado Supreme Court has come down firmly on one side of the debate. And in this particular instance, what this initiative does, hidden essentially within one of the exceptions, is it creates a right, the ability of someone to intervene, because someone has an interest in this, a property owner to intervene in the way land use regulations apply to their neighboring property. In other words, someone can say, my property, the value of my property is being reduced because of this particular exemption, because of the way this land use regulation is being applied, therefore I have a protected property interest in it. So that's a separate subject, and in fact it's a major and large separate subject. It's different from providing compensation for the diminution of value for someone who's subject to land use regulations. Rather, what it does is it creates a right of someone to enforce land use regulations and gives them a property interest. So that's the first argument. The second argument, or some of the other arguments have to do with the title itself rather than the single subject analysis. I would note, I don't know if there's an error, but it doesn't change my argument, but I will point it out, that it seems as though the official published ballot title at least didn't reflect my notes for what was adopted by the board last week. If I remember correctly, the proponents in that matter sort of passed out a prepared draft for a title for initiative number 126, which added language at the end of the proposed staff draft, and I looked at the staff draft for number 126, and it didn't seem to reflect that. In fact, the staff draft, as it currently appears on the website and the one that was passed out, is almost identical to ballot issue to the title for number 86. And if I may approach the board, I actually have copies of the title for number 86.
You all have it? Do you have it?
We have it. We do have it. Thank you.
Do you want to have a copy of it? Okay. Well, if you compare that to number 126, I think really the only difference is one says to provide compensation, the other one I think says providing compensation. I mean, the differences are absolutely meaningless, I'd argue. And in order to create a clear title, because we already have number 86, and I think it's plain from looking at number 126, is what it was designed to do was essentially confuse voters. Well, I'm sorry, I won't purport that level of intent to the proponents, but what it does, it takes the exact same framework, most of the exact same language, and adds a few changes, few in number, to number 86. And if I may approach, I actually have a redline version that compares number 86 to number 126 that highlights the changes.
Oh, for the record.
You have one more? I can give you this one for the record.
So if you look at the changes of number 126 compared to number 86, you know, some of these obviously are based on the way the WordPerfect, or I'm sorry, Microsoft Word actually operates in this. But so many of them are sort of just focused on capitalizations versus non-capitalizations. But really the main changes has to do with section 2B. 1 through 3. Those are the main changes that are added. The second, I think I would argue meaningful change, is the clear and convincing standard. That would be on the third page, about halfway down. At the top, see the currently approved versus that are approved by the public entity, and the removal of the public entity may not act inconsistently with the statement submitted to the owner. I'm not using that as a basis for my argument. I think the change is relatively minor. But it does change the burden of proof, and then at the bottom of that same sheet, it changes the actual canons of interpretation, how this should be interpreted. And then, of course, it removes the family member language as part of owner, which is defined at the top of the fourth page. So what I've tried to do is provide the board, because my argument is going to basically revolve. My argument basically is this. So what the board needs to do in order to avoid confusion is create a title that highlights the differences, well, that not only summarizes number 126, but highlights the differences between number 86 and 126. Because if you don't highlight those differences, the voters will essentially be confused by a generalized title that seems to say the exact same thing. And that's why I've provided an indication of the exact differences. The items I'd like to argue, 2A and the motion for rehearing, specifically focuses on the misleading similarities between 86 and 126. And that was what I just explained. It has to highlight those. The second argument is that I'd argue this essentially creates sort of the argument is this, that the exceptions contained in number 126 effectively nullify the function of the statute, or the function of the proposal, and the title board needs to indicate that. And that, the authority for that is the English only, or the English language education ballot title. That's 44 Pacific 3rd, 213. And there the court said, you know, as far as the parental waiver provisions, there are so many conditions that essentially the purpose, the intent, based on what it says, is to effectively prevent people from ever using the parental waiver provisions. Here, I argue it functions the exact same. For example, if you look at the second sheet where it says threaten commonly held community values, that's item 2B2, and 2B3 says threaten the natural or built environment, including. I think that it's a slam dunk argument for someone to say whenever a public entity whenever the representatives of a public entity enact a law, enact an ordinance, enact anything, but that is a representation of commonly held community values. Okay? It doesn't say, you know, a majority of people hold those values, simply says commonly held. And that, I think, can always be argued that any public entity that does this creates a commonly, is that's evidence itself of a commonly held community value. Furthermore, the way these are invoked, it doesn't have to violate those. It doesn't have to oppose or contradict those commonly held community values. Rather, it merely has to threaten them. It's an extremely low standard to be able to show that, you know, this exemption threatens my community, the commonly held community values. Well, I think the argument is, and I think, and it's always a winning argument, is that what this initiative does is it allows a public entity to say, we have, as the public entity, as the representatives of the, you know, the voters, we're allowed to speak for commonly held community values. I mean, that's our job. And as part of our job, we've created this, for example, zoning ordinance or permit requirement, because that reflects community values. And anything that contradicts that threatens those community values. It's a very, very, very low threshold to threaten commonly held community values. And likewise, to threaten the natural or built environment. In combination with that, if you look at the bottom of the next page where it says, all exceptions in paragraph A and B of this subsection shall be construed to protect the public health, safety, which mimic the language, but it goes beyond that, the morals or general welfare. Well, how do you determine what morals and general welfare are? Essentially, what you do, or what happens here, the way this functions, is the morals and general welfare is sort of what the General Assembly does. It says, at the end of every single piece of legislation, it makes a determination that it's necessary for public health, safety, and general welfare. I believe that's the exact phraseology. But and any public entity could make that exact same determination, say they're the ones who make that determination, and then for someone seeking an exemption would have to overcome that through clear and convincing evidence. That's an impossible standard. What this does is it essentially, the exceptions swallow the rule here. And any title is going to have to explain that exactly the way it happened in English-only language, where all of the exceptions and the procedural hurdles for the parental waiver notification effectively nullify the parental waiver notification ability. And because that title had not explicitly said that, had not made it clear to voters what they were voting for, it was a misleading title. Item 2C, the title, and I'm going off my notes. What was handed to me is the, not the one that's published, but the staff, for the staff draft that I received from the proponents when they passed it out. My understanding was that the board had adopted that. Under that assumption, what that said is it added to the title, unless said land use regulations serve to prevent the decrease in fair market value of any portion of surrounding real properties, protect commonly held community values, or protect the built or natural environment. I'd argue those are misleading, because as I talked about the exceptions themselves, it merely has to threaten commonly held community values. It doesn't have to violate them. And protecting them indicates that it prevents a violation. Same with threatening the natural or built environment. The standard is different than the one indicated in the language. That's for both 2C and 2D. 2E focuses again on the failure of the title to state that the exemptions must be construed to protect public health, safety, morals, and general welfare. And then finally, items F through I have included those and am truthfully not going to argue them before the board, and I'll explain why. This board, as the board probably knows, initiative number 86 has been appealed to the Colorado Supreme Court. The motion for rehearing for initiative number 86 focused on items F through I. As a representative of the proponents for that, I am arguing that F through I don't apply to number 86. I've only included them here in order to preserve my ability to make those challenges before the Colorado Supreme Court in the event the Colorado Supreme Court rules against the proponents in number 86. So it's a strange procedural posture for me to be in, but I do need to preserve these. I will make these objections before the title board, but I'm anticipating that the title board will reach the exact same conclusion that it did with number 86, and I'm assuming that the Colorado Supreme Court, if and when this one is appealed, will reach the same decision with respect to items F through I there as well. So I'm not going to belabor those points. In sum, really, I think the single subject issue is a critical one here because what this does is hidden within the initiative itself. It creates a new property right. It effectively overturns a portion of a Colorado Supreme Court case. It really isn't that old either, just several years old. Walks into the middle of sort of an ongoing national property rights debate and determines that. And that's a fundamentally different subject than providing compensation to owners for a reduction value of their land due to regulations. I'm happy to answer any questions that the board may have.
One area of confusion I have is it sounds like I'm concerned if we messed up our official results from what the title board did before. So I'm trying to figure out, you indicated that the results that we're showing is what we set for 126 is different from what you think the title board actually did last week, I believe. And I think Ms. Gomez was at least attempting to locate what we did on 126, which, if it's the staff draft as amended, is, I'm just trying to figure it out. It looks like we did change provide just compensation to compensate. According to this, anyway, if we're looking at the right one,
my understanding, I keep wanting to say Your Honor, Mr. Holmes, and I apologize. I only have one copy, and this is what the proponents had handed me. I'm happy to hand it to the title board here. My understanding is what the board did was actually adopt this almost in its entirety, if not in its entirety. I could be wrong. If I'm wrong, I think my arguments about misleadingly similar are even stronger. So in any event, I'm happy.
So this is, I'm sorry, I just want to be clear what.
Is that your recollection?
Yes.
Okay, it's the proponent's recollection that you had adopted that as well.
Where we would have inserted in certain circumstances and then added material at the end. It looks like 20% or more, but then added unless said land use regulations serve to prevent the decrease, et cetera. Okay.
I don't see anything here.
Although looking that up, I have a question.
Is this a printout from the title board from what we were doing? If you would introduce yourself.
Hi, my name is Will Coyne. I'm representing the proponents of Initiative 126. What you have in front of you is a document that we gave to you all on May 17th, and it was also my recollection that you all adopted those changes at that time.
So this is your document, but you think that's what we adopted?
Right, that's my document that we gave to Mr. Gessler last hearing.
Okay, thanks.
Take a break and listen to the tape.
I mean, we could try to listen to the tape and find that out, and we may want to take a break, but I mean, this does seem to be real important to straighten this out.
My objection, even if the board in its entirety adopts this, all of my objections would apply. The only one that it changes is, I believe, objection 2C. I'm sorry, 2C and 2D, which focused on that appended language. But otherwise, my arguments pretty much remain the same.
I'm sorry, I'm not sure I fully digested that. One of your concerns is the similar titles.
Yes.
Legitimate concern.
And my concern about similar title applies to both what appears on the website is the official, and it applies to that equally. Okay. And then I had two specific issues as to why the appended language on that was misleading, which applies to that version in your hand, but would not apply to the version on the Secretary of State's website. I see Mr. Carton vigorously nodding his head, so I hope I'm being...
Okay.
I may be being clear, at least to one person. I hope that answers your question.
Well, I mean, I have more questions, but I'm pretty sure that the first thing we need to do is establish what did the board do last time, regardless. But because it's kind of hard to go from here without knowing for sure what the board did at its previous meeting. Does everybody agree to that? I mean, I am inclined to take a time out here, and I mean, you know, the recording is on our website. Unfortunately, I don't think we have audio capabilities in this room to all listen to it together.
I recorded on tape also last time, so I could go get the tape.
It will, but unfortunately, it may take a while to locate it and locate where on the tape this one is.
I have it numbered. I can go get it and see.
Is it easier just to have somebody jump on a computer, your computer, and listen to it?
Yeah.
I think she's saying she's so well organized. Yeah.
You can do it quickly?
Whatever's quickest.
Well, I think this is probably the file.
Here's the file.
From what I remember, we didn't adopt their suggestion. But I can go get the tape.
I mean, this does look familiar to me. That's what's causing me additional concern. I didn't bring my file in, so I think we just need to take a break.
That's fine. And I can argue off of either baseline. But I just wanted to point out.
So I don't know how long it'll take, but I'm guessing at least 10 or 15 minutes.
Mr. Dunn had earlier requested that I keep this brief, so with respect to his objections...
No, I think we should break.
I mean, in fact, just for the sake of safety, what if we said we recess until 3:45? Is that okay with everybody?
That's fine. If I could just get a copy of that back at your
convenience. Gomez could first copy it, make several copies of that, and then we'll go from there and reconvene at 3:45, and I'm not sure what we'll figure out where our best resources are, but we'll come back and somebody will report on what they found out. Okay? Okay, so we're in recess until 3:45.